The wind rattled the windows of Tim Berners Lee's study. Outdoors, slate shadows dived across the English sky, promising rain before evening. Inside, the room was cluttered with substantiation of a life lived in service to connection. Piles of published papers lay on every face. Conference drafts, sequestration manifestos, law particles scribbled in pen. Against one wall leaned a worn whiteboard, its face so completely wormed with old marker lines it had come a palimpsest of ideas. Moment Berners Lee sat before his aging laptop, the screen filled with dispatches from around the world. He scrolled sluggishly, reading each bone. A inventor in Nigeria asked about integrating solid into original health records. A schoolteacher in Peru participated prints of scholars learning HTML on bestowed laptops. A grandmother in Canada thanked him for creating the place where she met her late hubby, in an old IRC chat room. He read them all with the same position of care. Every bone was a memorial, the web was in an abstract design. It was people. He opened a new document and began codifying sluggishly. The web is in machine. It's a discussion. He stopped, backspaced, tried again. We frequently forget there are humans on the other side of the screen, but the web is mortal through and through. He broke again, allowing. That was a verity he'd spent his whole life trying to explain and to defend. He flashed back to foremost days of solid, how some people dismissed it as quixotical, too academic. Decentralization is dead, they told him. No bone cares about data power. He smiled to himself. They had said the same thing about the web in the early 90s. That was too open, too lawless, too weird to work. And yet then they all were, living inside it. But he also flashed back how effects had gone wrong. Platforms that lock people in. Advertising models that stalk druggies. Intimation that metastasized. He was an eyeless to any of it. He still woke up some nights wondering if he could have done further to stop it. He clicked open another dispatch. This bone was from a youthful activist in Myanmar. They were trying to make secure channels for reporting mortal rights abuses, but faced constant suppression and internet shutdowns. They asked, is there any point in fighting presently? They just block everything. Berners, Lee read the question sluggishly. He felt the weight of it. He compartmented back. Yes, because every time you fight, you keep the possibility of freedom alive. They want you to stop believing. Do and give them that. He pressed shoot. Outside, the first drops of rain began tapping against a window. He closed his eyes and heeded. He liked the sound of rain. It reminded him of CERN, the damp alpine air, the silence of the lab at night as he enciphered with only the humming machine for company. That's where it had begun, the dream of universal access to information. He flashed back the blank gapes from associates who didn't see the point. He flashed back the unforeseen, dizzying excitement when it worked. How small the first web page was. How horizonless it felt. He got up sluggishly, joints complaining, and made his way to the kitchen. Rosemary was there, reading the review with her spectacles low on her nose. She looked up and smiled. Working again? He signed, answering questions. She raised an eyebrow. Saving the world? He laughed vocally, trying not to break it any farther. She poured him tea, the comforting ritual of their decades together. He sat across from her and took a slow belt. They talked about mundane effects the roof that demanded fixing, the neighbor's new baby, the early tomatoes in a hothouse. But also Rosemary set her mug down. You feel worried, she said gently. He didn't deny it. I got a letter from Myanmar, he said. She awaited, he explained. When he finished, she reached across the table and squeezed his hand. You say ain't fix everything, she reminded him. He jounced. But I say ain't stop trying. That night, unfit to sleep, he went back to his study. He turned on the beacon and flipped open a tablet filled with his unkempt penmanship. He'd been drafting a kind of fiat, not for the world, but for himself. It was ain't grand or polished. Just a list of commitments. He read them over, white heavy checkmark, always put the stoner first. No way vend out sequestration for convenience. White heavy checkmark here further than you talk. White heavy checkmark admit when you're wrong. White heavy checkmark Make the tools you want your children to use. He picked up his pen and added another white heavy check mark. Hope is a responsibility. He goggled at that last line for a long time. Hope was hard work. Harder, he allowed, than cynicism. It was easier to say, the web is broken, and walk down. Easier to believe nothing could change. But he refused, because he'd seen it change. He'd helped it change. And he believed it could change again. In the morning, he joined a call with the solid platoon. The group was larger than ever. Masterminds, contrivers, community organizers from each over the world. They bandied bugs, backing community governance. At one point, an inventor from Kenya described a deployment in an exile camp where families could keep their health records private, indeed in exile. Burners, Lee beamed. This, he said, tapping a screen. This is why. They all smiled. He didn't have to explain. They understood. After the call, he took a walk through the theater with Rosemary. The rain had stopped. The earth was dark and rich, smelling. New green shoots pushed up bravely through the damp soil. He stopped to respect them. Rosemary watched him, regaled. You love seeing effects grow, she said. He jounced. It means there's still time, he muttered. Time for what? He looked at her, eyes bright. To make it better. The summer of 2031 brought change. A major transnational peak was blazing the first global internet compact, convened by the United Nations. World leaders, technologists, proponents, indigenous communities, and indeed teenage coders were invited to share. The thing to establish a participated vision for the coming century of the internet, a digital social contract. Tim Berners. Lee was among the first to be asked. He dithered. I've spoken at enough summits, he told Rosemary one morning as they walked past the apple trees behind their home. But not like this, she said. He jounced. I just do want to be the voice of the history. You're not, she replied. You're the bone who saw it first. He agreed, but on one condition: he'd not give a speech. Rather, he'd sit in a circle of youthful people. No cameras, no branding, no chairpersons. Just a quiet room and a many hours together. He called it the Harkening Room. The organizers were skeptical. They wanted captions. But Berners, Lee stood establishment. He'd no interest in sound bites. He wanted verity. When the day arrived, the room was plain. Concrete walls, soft light, water and glass ewers, and a circle of chairpersons. They came from far and wide. Youth from pastoral India, Brazil, Syria, France, Ghana, New Zealand. Berners. Lee was the last to enter. He took a seat like anyone differently. Also, he said, tell me what the web means to you. The first to speak was a girl named Zora from Afghanistan. She had tutored herself to law by intimately downloading free PDFs. The web is where I met my first schoolteacher, she said. A youthful man from Finland followed. He erected open-source screen compendiums for eyeless druggies. The web should be audible, he said. Accessible, indeed, in silence. Also a Palestinian teenager spoke up. To me, the web is a border. Occasionally a ground. Occasionally a wall. Everyone heeded. No bone intruded. Tim took notes, but substantially he just watched. Their faces, their stories, their measures. Hours passed like twinkles. When someone eventually asked Berners, Lee would he allowed, he didn't give a lecture. He said, simply, you're the web now. My generation gave you a toolbox. You get to decide what to make. Also, he looked around the circle. Just flashback. Formerly, you make a commodity. It builds you back. That night, he walked alone through the megacity thoroughfares. The neon gleam from shop fronts lustered in the billabongs. His studies were loud. He felt commodity he'd felt in times of release. For so long, he'd carried the guilt of how the web had been twisted. Now, he saw the new generation lifting that burden, not with blame, but with determination. He returned to his hostel room, wrote a note in his journal. I no longer need to be the father of the web. I can be its forefather. It has children now. Back in Oxford, life moved pokily. He proceeded his routine, long walks, lab visits, quiet feasts with Rosemary. But the web no way left him. It lived in exchanges, the captions, the ambient gleam of bias far and wide. One autumn, he visited academy in a small ville outside city. The schoolteacher had erected a bitsy computer lab using gear piece and recycled observers. When the kiddies heard who he was, they were stupefied. One boy rumored, "You made the internet?" "Burners," Lee smiled. "Not relatively. I helped make the web, the part you browse." Another pupil raised her hand. "But how does it work?" He didn't launch into protocols or packets. Rather, he drew on the whiteboard a person, a runner, a link. "You write commodity. You connect it to commodity differently. And someone far down reads it. That's the web." A girl in the reverse raised her hand. "So it's like writing letters to the world?" "Burners," Lee's eyes lit up. "Yes," he said vocally. "Exactly that." Latterly, as he sat in the empty classroom, watching computers go to sleep, he allowed about that conceit. Letters to the world. That had always been his vision. Not algorithms crying into the void, but quiet dispatches between humans, each seeking to be understood. The world wasn't standing still. New battles were arising. AI-driven misinformation juggernauts. Synthetic media. Global surveillance expanding behind ever-friendlier interfaces. In a podcast interview, someone asked him, "Sir Tim, do you ever wish you hadn't constructed the web?" He answered calmly, "No. I only wish we defended it sooner." Also, he added, "The web didn't break itself. People broke it, and people can fix it." He'd come a tutor further than a mastermind. And in that part, he set up peace. He met with youthful coders, muses, digital proponents. He gave subventions to systems that asked bold questions. Not what can we make, but what should we? At one similar meeting, a teenage inventor from Senegal showed him a web cyber surfer for the eyeless that used vibrational feedback through the fingertips. "Burners," Lee asked, "what made you suppose of this?" "My uncle lost his sight," the teen said. He said silence was worse than blindness. "Burners," Lee jounced. "Also, you're not just erecting a tool. You're giving back sound." He spent 1 week in a month working on a deeply particular design of time capsule, but not the kind filled with objects. This bone was digital. He called it the heart of the web. It was a collection of letters, law fractions, delineations, dreams, submitted by people around the world about what they hoped the web could come. There were no analytics, no advertisements, no pollutants. Just hope, still archived. It would live on solid, open ever. When asked why, he said, "I want the future to know we tried." He was aged now, slower, but no way still. One morning, while sorting lines, he set up the printout of his original 1989 offer. Information management, a offer. He held it in his hands like a sacred relic. It was humble, just the many runners of ambition, the kind of idea people overlook in meetings. He smiled and rumored himself, vague but instigative. That's what his master had scribbled on it the first time he read it. "Burners," Lee laughed out loud, alone in the room. So much had grown from that vague dream. So important remained. The sun filtered through the altitudinous windows of Burners, Lee's study, casting pale blocks across heaps of books and scribbled notes. He sat at his office with a mug of tea cooling beside him, reading over dispatches he would publish out, because he still liked paper, despite having constructed the web. These were letters from non-natives and musketeers likewise. A Chilean schoolteacher describing assignments on digital citizenship. A Ukrainian coder structured decentralized libraries of artistic heritage. A Filipino fisher's son literacy python to map sustainable crop zones. They weren't just druggies. They were co-creators. He tapped his pen against the office and leaned back. He felt a frazzle that was physical but also philosophical. The weight of knowing that no technology could break all mortal problems. He'd long ago rejected the messianic hype that frequently girdled originators. He was no rescuer, just a builder. He allowed frequently a commodity. He formally told a class, "Tools amplify us. However, they make kindness easier, if we're kind. However, they make atrocity simpler, if we're cruel." One autumn, he agreed to give a talk at a small community center in Oxford. it was end a prestigious university lecture or a commercial event. Just locals curious about the man who had made the web. He walked in with his battered satchel, gestured away any formal preface, and began with a question, who then has used the web moment? Every hand went up. He smiled. Also, you're all web makers, whether you know it or not. He didn't talk about protocols or specialized norms. He told stories about CERN, about writing the first cybersurfer, about erecting solid in coffee shops with scholars, about the letters he entered not all praise, some angry, some grieving, some soliciting for help. He told them about the Harkening Room, about Zora in Afghanistan, about the boy in Senegal. He finished by saying, I'm not then to give you answers. I'm then to ask you to watch. Because if you watch, you'll ask better questions than I ever did. When the talk ended, the followership sat in silence for a moment before erupting in applause. Subsequently, a woman approached him with her teenage son. She was crying. Thank you, she said, her voice pulsing. I lost my hubby last time. The support groups online. They saved me. I just wanted you to know. Burners! Lee jounced, swallowing hard. He gently rested a hand on her shoulder. That's what it's for, he said vocally. He went home that evening in a reflective mood. Rosemary met him at the door with her usual knowing smile. Tired? He jounced. She handed him a mug of tea. He belted it sluggishly, savoring the heat. They didn't speak much. They didn't need to. That night, before bed, he stood at the window watching the moonlight on the field. He flashed back a line from an old lyric, What will you do with your one wild and precious life? He rumored the words into quiet. What had he done? Erected commodity beautiful. Broken, yes. Misused, yes. But beautiful all the same. And not finished. No way finished. In the coming months, he continued his quiet work. He traveled less but wrote further. Papers. Essays. Letters of stimulant to youthful inventors. He shared in open forums about web governance. When invited onto a panel with commercial directors arguing that sequestration was over, he smiled politely and said, Sequestration is an over. It's just underrated. And the web remembers what we value. He refused to give up on solid. It was slow work, infuriatingly so. Backing was always fragile. Maintainers burned out. Law broke. But it was alive. And that was enough for him. Because every person who chose solid chose to enjoy their data, chose quality over convenience. He called it the slow revolution. And he was at peace with slow. He spent long afterlife in the theater with Rosemary. They talked about everything and nothing. She teased him about the weeds he let grow too long. He argued they were biodiversity. He liked seeing the notions. He liked the sense of tending commodity that would outlast him, because that, too, was the web. One evening, they sat outside as the sun sank in a blaze of orange. She asked him, Do you still worry? He smiled sorely. All the time. She squeezed his hand. That's why you were the right one to make it. He looked at her, eyes shining. I didn't make it alone. Their quiet days were pointed by calls from intelligencers, scholars, world leaders. He spoke to them all with the same modesty. He no way claimed to have the answers. Only questions worth asking. At 82, he was slower to climb stairs. He let the youthful coders do the coding, but he still reviewed their work, scribbling notes in perimeters. Where's the stoner's choice? Is this inclusive? Who owns this? Always the same questions. Questions that refuse to die. In his last public address, streamed to millions, he sat in an armchair, voice softer than it formerly was, but still clear. He didn't lecture. He didn't scold. He simply spoke from the heart. We erect a commodity extraordinary, and also we let it be twisted, but it is ent ruined. It is ent lost. It's ours. Yours. Anyone's who cares enough to fix it. He ended with a final plea, please. Do and settle for what the web is. Demand what it can be. After his end, people didn't just flash back Tim Berners, Lee as the innovator of the World Wide Web. They flashed back his questions. They flashed back his modesty. They flashed back the way he always handed the responsibility back. They flash back, he believed the web was a pledge. One we had to renew again and again. And in the far corners of the globe, people did. They wrote their letters to the world. They erected new networks, decentralized and just. They tutored each other to law. They fought for sequestration and verity. They flashed back, the web was then finished. It no way would be. It was alive, as long as someone nearly watched enough to tend it. Because the web, in the end, was and his. It was ours. It was everyone's. And so, with quiet, stubborn stopgap, they kept structure.